There ain't no way.
Racial diversity came without brothers and sisters marrying. I'm not proposing that now. We've done so much to mess up our genetic streams that the more diverse the coupling, the safer the genetic outgrowth. And ethics and morals have followed the reality of life as it's become. But I've been saying for a long time, the church is hung up because it confuses ethics and morality with righteousness. Ethics is a product of culture. God can make a contribution to it. It is rules of behavior that bind a society for good. Morality is consistency with your comprehension of the good in your performance. You are moral to the degree that you are doing to the best of your ability what you honestly believe is good. That doesn't make you righteous. You can go to hell doing that. But I'd much rather sail around the world with somebody that honestly is committed to doing what he thinks is right. The moment I can define what he thinks is right, I know how to get out of his way when he starts moving. Or get with him when I want to move with him. Morality is consistency of performance with your view of the right. The thing I have against the preachers is they're trying to cram their view of the right down my neck and make me be more consistent doing what they think is right than they've ever been. Righteousness can only be defined by and come from God. And God has demonstrated throughout his book from beginning to end, there is no righteousness, God's righteousness, apart from God. Even if our social ethics is a result of a contact point with God where our social formula is an approximation of his law, and we consistently try to perform it, it still falls short of God's righteousness. It's just a little better formula of ethics and morality than those that have had no contact with God at all. And it ought to produce humility instead of self-righteousness, because with the knowledge of God's standard, the level rises so high that the distance between performance and the level is so heightened, it produces the humility that cries, woe is me, and makes you a candidate for God's rescue, empowerment through his own righteousness, which is put in us because we faith. The missing message of Christianity. See, I've been listening to preachers of late. Something I haven't done for years. I never realized how far off they were. I mean, the blind are really leading the blind. There is no... The church is preaching ethics and morality. Limited comprehensions of it. A tug of war between their ability to impose it. That's all the moral majority is. An imposition of one viewpoint of ethics and morality. I could believe, because it's available, that they might have a better understanding of God's pattern than most if they weren't so self-righteous. But when I see self-righteousness, I know they've never even come to understand what God's standard is. Because it always produces the attitude of Isaiah, woe is me. I'm a sinner. But they've reduced God down to thou shalt not smoke. Thou shalt not play around with other people's wives and get caught. Thou shalt not undress women. that you're not married to, except with your eyes and in your heart. I've watched them. I've watched them in their self-righteousness. Keeping their own wife so ugly and colorless, they fall for a woman of color. Entire self-righteousness had nothing to do with God's righteousness. You can't even make a millimeter of progress toward God's righteousness by self-effort. The only effort we do is faith that puts God's Spirit in us, and then you grab hold of God's righteousness as it begins to work, and as it surprises you, and as your nature begins to change, you then identify with the change. And you willingly step into the missile that's being launched. But when you identify our moral standards with godliness, God can't act. It's like, you know, I parodied God this morning when I was preaching. I said, I preached all these years and God's not learning a thing. I figured out what's wrong. I've preached it for years and God's not learning a thing. He don't know how to keep time. He don't know one day from another. He's never on time. He has no sense of our problems. To him, one day is 1,000 years. Do you realize what a guy can let slip up on him when he's got that kind of attitude? I only got 20 days. He's living under this delusion of, you know, I don't really have to plug Scott in for another 1,000 years. God's not spiritual. He needs a PR firm to make him get things in the right order. He should minister first before he takes money. He just grabs the offering right going out the gate, you know. He hadn't done a thing yet to get that offering. You knew I was being a fool, doing a parody. Well, the church world's the same way, you know. God can't work through somebody like this. Brothers and sisters sleeping together. They had wars. They fought. God empowered Noah and his sons to divide the world up. And in Genesis 2, God divided the world into 4 basic categories. The Lord planted a garden. Genesis 2, 8th verse. You're not interested in this.
Yes, sir.
Garden eastward in Eden, there he put the man whom he had formed. Now, the Hebrew has it very clear. He didn't create him in Eden. He created him somewhere else, but he placed him in Eden. And the Hebrew word is not so much limited to geographic positioning as it is authority. He placed him in charge of Eden. Now the ground made the Lord God to grow every tree that's pleasant to the sight and good for food, the tree of life also in the midst of the garden, the tree of knowledge of good and evil. He was in charge of both of them. But he wasn't supposed to eat one of them. And a river went out of Eden to water the garden, and from thence it was parted. Now, there's where the King James all fouls up, because they couldn't visualize this. They were in the Romanic age. They had to somehow figure out how this could happen, so the river had to divide. Well, how do you divide a river and make it become 4 heads? Heads of streams is a start over. You trace a river to its head, you come to the spring where it first comes out of the ground. And a lot of confusion has come. Trying to figure out, because the Euphrates River is named, And what appears to be the Tigris River is named, though not necessarily. And people try to figure out, well, now, where are these four rivers that must be flowing from a common source? That isn't what it says. A common source was in the Garden of Eden, a source of water for Eden. Have I got 60 seconds or a minute? What is it? 1 minute? Well, they're the same, aren't they? 60 seconds or a minute. You know, God's got me even confused about time. Have I got 1,000 years or what? That water source suddenly becomes four headwaters. So we can have four big river systems start from four completely remote places. God's in charge. Just like he divided the water and put some in a canopy and some below. Now here are the four. River went out of Eden. The water of the garden, from thence it was parted, divided. Came into four heads. It could be the Ganges. Could be the Congo, could be the Colorado, could be the Mississippi. You're not interested in this, are you?
Yes, sir.
I don't think you are. I'll be right back.
Preachers, they must never be seen, be upset, acting mean. Musicians must not play too loud.
The doctor is in. Not a lot of hoopy, just straight talk with Dr. Gene Scott.
Oh, how to be. They say, don't do this, do that. Then God will love you. I don't like it. God don't like it too.
Talking about incest. God's servants and incest. In the book of Genesis, which means beginnings. That begins something. Welcome to the people who just joined us. I've been teaching on Genesis, and it's got some mind bogglers. Where'd Cain get his wife? He either married his sister or the Bible is wrong. And there were some peoples other than those that came from Adam and Eve. Where'd we get our races? That brings us to Noah, his three sons, and the four wives that were on the ark. And there are four major racial types with variations. I'm in Eden right now, second chapter of Genesis. You want me to stay there?
Yes, sir.
No, you'd rather I'd go to that other juicier part. The Lord planted a garden. You got to say this no matter what. The Lord planted a garden eastward in Eden, Genesis 2:8. Page 2 if you got a Bible like mine. There he placed the man whom he had formed, the Adam, literally. Was that just Adam? No. Another chapter, he calls both of them Adam. Place means to have dominion, authority over them. A river went out of the garden, verse 10 says, to water the garden, from thence it was parted. Parted hardly says it. Divided. And it became the headwaters of four different rivers. Not necessarily was Eden the headwaters of four rivers that flowed out of Eden. Not necessarily. The water source in Eden became headwaters for four other water sources. The name of the first is Pison. That is it which compasseth the whole land of Havilah, or Shavilah, where there is gold. And the gold of that land is good. There's bdellium and the onyx stone. Where's Havilah? where the red people live. I'm going to tell you that. You're going to say, how do you know? Well, we'll see. Just write it in the margin. The red race is going to live there. The name of the second river is Gihon. The same is it that compasseth or compasseth the whole land of Ethiopia. How many of you have in the margin for Ethiopia what the King James people wouldn't use? Cush. Cush. The traditional land of the black people. I want to tell you, many ancient cultures place the reds and the blacks side by side and in conflict. That's one of the most ancient motifs from cultures of South America to, it's too hot in here, to various mythical tracements back into the dim memory of time. The name of the third river is Hiddekel. That is it which goeth toward the east of Assyria. The ancient land of the Caucasians and the whites. The fourth river is Euphrates. The ancient land of the yellow, the plain of Shinar, where Noah, with his yellow traits, do you realize what it's going to do, absolutely going to do, to, I think that the air conditioning stopped blowing cold air. And we may need to send somebody on the roof to check it. I know. I sit under this. Do you feel cold air coming down? Yes, sir. You feel it back there? Some of you do. Some of you don't. You're supposed to say. I want somebody to check it anyway. You go up on the sound mic. So we can free an engineer to go on the roof. I'm feeling a little cold air now. This is the strangest thing. I am going to deed this building and its air conditioning to hell. I think there ought to be a room down there. Ultimately. I know it's for us to have a trial of faith. But I know where it belongs ultimately. Will you help me with my secret till I can ultimately get out of this room? Hey, have I told you? To you, listen to me. To you that know the secret, you'll know what I'm going to say cryptically. We did it again yesterday. Up to bat four times. Still batting 1,000. Just what I told you. And we ain't even really started yet. You know, just dangling the crud. Who is this masked man? They ain't seen nothing yet. We're just giving them the fringe territory. You ain't seen nothing yet. To you that know the secrets, you know exactly what I've told you, don't you? Four down. 2 weeks from now is number five. I'm on schedule. It's God and you that we got a problem with. The fourth river is Euphrates. You know, it just really It just really dries up the brains. It just gives you such a hot head, it dries up the brains. To think that the mark of Cain might be white and that Noah might be yellow. Oriental. Do you know what I'm doing to the purity of the... You know, we don't really mind. All superior white folks don't mind them yellow and red and black people getting saved as long as they know their place. After all, we've got to have a few servants in heaven. You know, I dread somebody taking that out of context and just quoting it by itself. I'll sue the son of a buck if he does. I'm just trying to point out how deep bias runs. You think you're not biased until somebody dares to come along and say, you white Christians are bearing the mark of Cain. Well, now, I can understand the blacks not wanting to have to be told they're bearing the mark of Cain. Let's just put the mark of Cain in obscurity. I'm willing to deliver them from it, but don't put it on me. I think God's pretty smart, you know. There ain't ever been anybody as good at populating as the Chinese. I mean, they're the biggest nation the world's ever seen. I mean, God knew exactly who to take through that flood and start this repopulation task to. But it just jars good old pure U.S. of A. American God-like qualities to think that the whites might be the mark of Cain and the father of the human race reconstituted after the flood might be Oriental. Just think on that for a minute. There are people backsliding all over this nation right now. That just doesn't set too well with me. Do you get that from the Bible? Well, we'll see, won't we? Well, I won't believe it until I get it straight out of chapter and verse. What the confession really is, the way in which we have read our views into the Bible and how intolerant we are of seeing it in a different light. Well, Jesus was white. Well, there ain't no quarrel with that. That's the whole point I've been making for the last hour and a half. I mean, I think it's really something for the substance of God to move into the womb of a woman if she really is carrying the mark of Cain. I mean, that just increases the step that God talks about in Philippians 2. He humbled himself and became a servant, made in the likeness of man. He didn't just come down to the pinnacle of human behavior. He went to the basement. And the fact that God could pick Abraham and elect a people to show forth his glory and to demonstrate his faithfulness on, that distant from him. As I analyze it, I could hope that the evidence is overwhelming. But at the very least, there isn't anybody got a corner on God's grace. That's the point I'm making. And these people who, from whom we've sprung, do you realize how much meaning I have placed into the verse of Scripture Remember the pit from which you were dug? We be children of Abraham. Well, you know who he was a kid of? Now, if you go to Genesis 10 and Genesis 11, Genesis 10 speaks of the races of mankind. Genesis 11 is the genealogy of Shem. You will find names that correspond to Havilah, and to Cush. And you will get, when you know how to read the original, you will get the impression that the writer is very familiar with the Tigris-Euphrates area, because that's the area that is the heartland from which the chosen people move out to Palestine. You know, it slips out in your conversation. We describe the United States in a way a bit differently than we do the bush country of Africa, the Siberian wastelands, or the Ganges River Valley. It just comes out. We make it clear while we talk that they're distant and here's familiar. There's scriptural revelation is through a people that live and dwell in two of the territories. And it comes out. They speak of Cush, and they speak of Havilah as more distant areas. And you can trace in the names of Genesis 10 and Genesis 11 a pattern of repopulation and an identity with these four streams of Genesis 2. And instead of a bunch of jerks that God brought through the flood to promptly do nothing, you get the impression that Noah planted a vineyard, got drunk, took his clothes off, was peeped on, tattled on, covered with a blanket, and Shem, Japheth, Noah, and Ham disappear. Suddenly to reappear in the kingdom of Nimrod in ancient Shinar or Babylon, build a tower of Babel, and they all had one bland language that God now confuses. And the descendants of Shem are picked up, once you get through all the begetting, by Abram. And you don't even know where Ur of the Chaldees is, because there were three of them. I tell you that. And then God deals with the descendants of Abram, Isaac, and Jacob, and it all flows from there. And we don't have any trouble with the second millennium B.C., because that's the millennium of Abraham and his descendants. The third millennium, which is the millennium, if the Bible and the short chronology of the evangelical frame is true, that the flood occurred somewhere around and just before 2500 B.C., which makes me ask the question, is it possible that the pyramid gives us the date of the flood and eventually we're going to work it out? Is it possible that 2623 is the day that they stepped out of that ark? What's your date? The cowards in evangelical Christianity are buying the bunk that it occurred 10,000 years ago, 5,000 years ago, 4,000 years ago, or that it was a local flood. Well, fine, I won't lose my faith if it is. I'm just going to say, wait a minute, I think I'm going to join the people that think maybe Genesis was written by more than one author and some of them never should have been read. But if we believe that Moses got this revelation, and as the apocryphal books have it, he got it on Sinai and God gave him this knowledge, And to preserve a pure stream of revelation, we have the book of beginnings, which is Genesis. And if we are going to believe that, which is the core of evangelical biblical viewpoint, then you're going to have to swallow some other things. You're going to have to swallow the kind of people God did His work with. His job with Noah. You say, well, Noah was a preacher of righteousness. Well, what did that mean? It's not necessarily defined in Lynchburg. He couldn't turn the TV on. God hadn't yet spoken from Sinai. And you've got to adjust your viewpoint and understand the primary job given now to Noah and his sons is to finish what Adam didn't do right. To set the boundaries. You're going to find over in Deuteronomy, God sets the boundaries for all the nations. See, Noah is the father of the Gentiles as well as the Jew and the Shemites and the Israelites. How did all these races come about? And how could these guys accomplish this with their women and still be acceptable at the Saturday Southern Baptist Supper? Now that's the subject. I got 10 minutes before New York and Dallas join me. They won't know what I'm talking about, so I'll have to either change the subject or quick catch them up quick. But I'm here for other reasons tonight, and I think I'm proven. Instead of the marathon, I'm going to keep teaching. You interested in any of this?
Yes, sir.
I want to know to gestalt it. Have I simply convinced you one thing? Don't read Genesis if you aren't willing to stop and think. Huh? And the neat little traditional formulas won't package what Genesis contains. And you realize how prejudiced we are? To think that a mongoloid fathered the race. And if it hadn't been for Cain, we whites wouldn't be here. We have a testimony service next Sunday. I want to thank the Lord for Cain because it wasn't. Was I born you? You say to me, well, you haven't proven that. Well, I know that. I mean, it ain't my style to prove everything in one night. I've proven this. There's one hell of a lot of prejudice floating around. There'll be people tonight much more sympathetic to Cain getting forgiven than they were before this session started. Talladega, Alabama. Found you on Westar 5 accident about 5 weeks. We leave our set on you 24 hours per day. Already pledged $1,000 we'll send in shortly. People think I'm nuts to watch a cussing preacher. You know, I want to tell you, when I found out that this little sprinkling of grammar, an occasional damn in hell, was upsetting the traditional Christians as much as it did and continues to do, I now know that I'm speaking directly from God. Anything that upsets the Pharisees that much makes me like Jesus. I'm telling you. You remember what Patton said when they asked him if he read that Bible he kept by his bedside? realize how much self-righteousness I've smoked out with a damn and a hell? What really makes me mad is that doesn't qualify as cussing. I really know how to cuss. You ask the few people in my life I've gotten really mad at. It's worth getting the royal chewing out for me because you can write down words you can use forever. Damn in hell's not cussing. And I said it this morning. It is a much greater sin to use the words that Gideon used. If wherewith, alas, I'm the least, show me a sign. It is a much greater sin to use the vocabulary of doubt than to say damn in hell. I am shaking people's self-righteous imagery. They thought they could get to heaven by leaving a few words out. The limited vocabulary approach to glory. Verbal censorship of the speech-making process. And you know what really bothers them? Is anybody teaching the Bible saying damn in hell should drop dead? The fact that I don't either proves God isn't powerful, or God doesn't care, or they're wrong. That really wasn't bothersome. The damned idiots. Now, which is worse? Which is worse, for me to jar them to enough attention to understand what God's really about with an occasional hell here and there, or them to stay stupid and live in hell forever? Think on that. The vocabulary of doubt. You can make a man quit saying hell and that. And there ain't no verses for that. Where is the verse of Scripture that says, thou shalt not say hell? Huh? Now, the Bible prohibits swearing. That's laying your hand on the Bible and saying, I swear, or swear by God. You're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to say yea. Your yea should be yea, and your nay, nay. I am amazed at the way I'm working up the church world with a couple of words. Damn and hell. I think asteroid orifices is rather sophisticated. It's about time that some preacher sound like he's going to school. Don't you think? I mean, you know, most of them sound like the criteria for anointing is getting in a time machine, going back to third grade education. The church really doesn't believe that all those sins God's against are sin. Oh, I know that you're not supposed to judge, but he needs to be judged. That's what they're saying about me. I love his soul. Well, that's what they've been cutting on us so much about, huh? To find the soul. Why they've been boring these holes in us. I never seen the like. A little hell and a damn. I got news for them. I'm going to keep doing it. Do you really think that what I'm doing to jar a few traditions is half as bad as Jesus deliberately taking his disciples through the corn on the Sabbath day so they'd pluck the corn and violate centuries-old traditions? Huh? And Paul eating with those Christians at Antioch? Well, I don't want my kids saying damn in hell. Well, tell them not to, stupid. Bust their butt if they do. Well, how can I when you do? Well, they ain't me. Tell them to get a PhD from Stanford, pastor a church 15 years, and get on national television station, and they can say damn in hell. Until they do, they better not. The people are so stupid. Really stupid. Don't tell them. Jesus will hate them if they say damn in hell. Say, I'll bust your butt if you do. Well, why? Because I'm the boss. You're still eating under my table. Go out and support me. Bring the food in. And I'll not say damn in hell and you can say it. Don't make simple things complicated. And if all else fails and they say why, you say, because I told you so. Stupid, shut up. Don't lay that trip on me. I obey God. When you give me the verse where he says I can't do it, I don't do it. Your kids obey you. You ain't God. Quit trying to act like you are. You're just the boss in your home. You know, people just confuse very simple things. You and your wife make babies. You made him. You don't let them make babies yet. There are certain distinctions and rights. Oh, I never thought of that. It's harder and harder to love some damn preachers. It's harder and harder each day. Oh, well, it's harder and harder to love some damn preachers. It's harder and harder each day. They frown on my cussing. It drives them to fussing. It's harder and harder each day. When I see them fussin', it drives me to cussin'. It's harder and harder each day. That's C minus 7. That's way down there. If they could, they would change me and then rearrange me. But that's harder and harder each day. For I am what I am with my hell and my day. They can take it and shove it, I pray. Oh, well, it's harder and harder to love some damn preacher. Harder and harder each day. Well, it's harder and harder to love some damn preacher. It's harder and harder each day. Now, what's a damn in a hell? I ain't crawling in bed with my sisters and my son's wives. That's the kind of people God worked with after the flood. Well, I'm just not going to believe that. Well, then believe evolution and polygenesis. Help yourself and throw Genesis out. Of course, it's not worse to throw Genesis out than it is to say hell and damn. Christianity has gone nuts. And the blind are leading the blind.
This is the end of side 3.